Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show. One of the earliest places I remember seeing authentic expressions of queer identity was on the TV show Project Runway. Listen, I'm from a very small, very religious town. To say I didn't get out much is the understatement of the millennium. But it was through this unique reality show that I was able to see men, gay men, centered, supported, and getting to shine doing something that they not only loved doing, but were great at. Something that, where I'm from, was frowned upon for boys to do. Since that time, I've seen all sorts of representation make its way to our televisions and movie screens, showcasing ever more beautiful intersections of diversity. One of the benefits of having this type of behind-the-scenes look at the growing and changing face of fashion is seeing in real time how we are moving away from the staid silhouettes from the small number of fashion houses that dominated runways for nearly a century. Because of this, we are seeing an ever-expanding array of fashions for people of all sizes, all races, all levels of modesty, and all facets of gender expression. And we're getting to know the people bringing these much-needed changes to our runways and our closets. Charles Liu is a Canadian fashion designer whose work has been seen in London, Dubai, and on the hit Netflix show Next in Fashion with Tan France. The child of Vietnamese refugees, he knew his entire life he was going to be a fashion designer. He will make you rethink your relationship to hoodies. And he is my guest today. We have a wide-ranging discussion on the future and fallibility of fashion, where it's come from, how it's changing, and where it's going next. Here's Charles Liu. Charles Liu, welcome to Head on Fire. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know if people don't know who you are. I have certainly been following your career for years now. But for folks who do not know you or your platform, tell people a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a fashion designer, and people know me from Netflix. Netflix's Next in Fashion, the fashion design competition. I was on the first season, which was, in my opinion, a great season because we had such so many different cultural perspectives on that show. I was also a fashion designer in London and then in Dubai with a smaller audience, but more recently, I just showed my own eponymous label in Toronto. So that's how people kind of know me now, but most likely people have found me through Next in Fashion.
Iconic sweatshirt hoodie thing from that first season that just went viral. And then I feel like a million people tried to copy.
So many people actually. Well, it was really awful because it was awful and it wasn't awful because, you know, I guess it kind of resonated with people, and that's what I knew this garment would do. I recreated that the ex-boyfriend hoodie for my own label, but I made the cuts better. I used more luxe materials. I incorporated a little bit of leather in the corset, and then I did a different version of that, which is I just posted that not too long ago. And that went kind of like people really, really took to that one. I mean, we had a lot of offers and a lot of celebrities wanting to pull for that one. But I don't do a lot of celebrities pulls right now, only because the last few that I've done mainly involved LA, but they got caught at the border. Right. And then they got lost. So I think like a third of it, the collection was like lost.
And international shipping right now is
it's terrible.
Like, for the last few years has been a minefield.
And so I'm very picky with who I loan things out to now. But that was definitely an iconic, I would say iconic look, because that look is probably the one, that streetwear episode, that sparked something inside of me to change the new of where I wanted to go. Because prior to that, I was an evening wear designer, which is what I thought I wanted to be when I was a kid. but not anymore.
Where did this love of fashion come from? How'd you get started? Where'd you get your first sewing machine?
I was always interested in the arts, and my mother used to work at the Levi's and Oshkosh factory.
Oh, wow.
Aunt whom she lived with actually owned a clothing manufacturing company in Vietnam, but nothing to the capacity it was here. Like, she was just trying to find, generally, she was just trying to make ends meet and find work here and as a seamstress. And I was always fascinated with the sewing machine. She would never let me touch it. So I kind of transitioned from art to clothing. And I remember I was like grade 5, so I must have been probably 10, 11 years old when I decided that that was a medium I wanted to work and express in, because this idea of being wearable, really something wearable, really interested me. How did it start? I mean, like, my mother wouldn't let me touch the sewing machine, so I would hand sew things. And then when she used to go upstairs to go to work, I would sneak into her room and use that sewing machine and mess everything up, like all the thread, all the tension and everything. And they bought me a sewing machine when I was, do you know those infomercial sewing machines that are like tiny? And yes. it was like mainly white and had all these gray buttons. And I found it at like Canadian Tire.
I didn't know if you meant like the little one that looks like pliers or whatever, where it's like you're holding it and it's like a little handheld sewing machine thing.
Stuff on it. Like it was like a little machine, but I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. But I would play with that. My parents got that for me for Christmas, and I was so excited. It never worked properly, but I tried to make it on there. And then eventually she let me use her sewing machine. And then eventually my father brought home this these industrial sewing machines, which I still sew on today. And it's a kind of big circle, full circle moment, because the sewing machine I sew on today that my father helped get from my mom, which I've just claimed as my own now, for me, it's the top of the line, which is Juki, the manufacturer of these machines. And I'm actually a brand ambassador of Juki now. And they sponsored the launch of my collection. So it's very
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I did not have the love for clothing arts or sewing, but I did learn on an old Singer sewing machine. My great grandmother taught me to sew and to knit and like basic stuff. Like, I have a little wallet that I made.
Well, to learn how to sew,
she had this big Singer sewing machine from like the 30s, like with the pedal, you know, that big metal pedal.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. My friend actually, if you speak to a tailor, that some of those sewing machines are really good to sew on, because the
control the needle up and down,
the way the tension is set up, the threads have a little bit of give. So a lot of tailors love sewing on older pedal sewing machines. Like, in my friend in London taught me about that. For some people are really into cars, I'm like really into sewing machines. It really turns me on.
It's about to be a very different kind of show. Like you said, a lot of people do know you from that sort of first season appearance in Next in Fashion. Talk to me a little bit about the differences in making it as a fashion designer before international exposure versus after international exposure. Is suddenly everything so much better after being on a TV show? Is it good but different?
Well, I would say you could work your whole life and never get recognition, right? And I my goal in life was never to get that kind of clout. I just kind of felt I remember watching Project Runway and thinking, you know what, that'd be so nice if I could do that, right? Because that was the what I never was into was like the interview process, because I'm not that kind of person that chases wanting like fame or whatever. Wanted my work to speak for itself. And so the trajectory of my life was, if I thought I worked hard enough and I just was very honest in my work and my creative process, it would be recognized one day, hope. And I had a lot of faith that it would. I didn't know that, you know, but that's a gamble. You never know, right? So I spent my whole life working really, really hard to show the world what I could do, work for multiple brands as a creative director. And then I've shared this story a few times, but not a lot of people know this, but when I was a creative director in London, the person I was working for basically stole my whole sketchbook and pretended I wasn't the designer at all. Hired me on to design the collection, and I was so desperate because that was the only job I had. And it was they'll always dangle the last paycheck in front of me to make me come back. And I remember she walked out on the fashion show after the fashion show, and everyone's clapping for her. And I was just like, I was amazed that someone could actually think that they took all this credit for the work that wasn't theirs. But I always think everything happens for a reason, right? You can kind of choose how you react to the bad things in your life. Mm-hmm. And I remember I went on their company Instagram, and I was like, during the fashion show, I looked at this guy who was just kind of like in sunglasses in this vintage kind of bomber looking at the show. And I added him and he added me back, and he followed my career. So this is, I would say 2013, 14, I can't remember. It's a blur. But he followed my work all the way up into Dubai. So this is we're talking up until 2018, 2019. And he messaged me. He's like, hey, would you be interested on being in a competition? And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? And then he, you know, he disappeared and would come back occasionally. And then he said, yeah, you know, I'm going to bring you this person to be in contact with you. Turns out I was not auditioning, but they scouted me for Next in Fashion. So if I never added him, right, I would have never been on Next in Fashion. And we wouldn't be having this discussion. So everything kind of leads to the next step. And you kind of have to have an open heart for that to happen. Yeah.
You mentioned Project Runway, which is sort of the spiritual predecessor to shows like Next in Fashion. I feel like every gay and their mom, no matter how conservative their mom, every gay and their mom had that love of Project Runway. Having been on one of those shows, does the process end up helping you create good art? Is it the worst thing for art? It's so interesting because we've never done a show like that for like painters, and we've never done a show. I mean, we've done a show like that for sculptors. The Great British Bake Off has the same production team has one for like sculptors and clay and stuff like that. But and I think they try to do one for jewelry, but I've never seen something like that for a lot of other visual artists. So is that environment good for creativity? Is it terrible for creativity?
I think it depends. Certain designers work and they need a lot of time to be able to come up, right? Or they need a lot of references. So it does appeal to a certain kind of designer. And the common thread amongst all these shows is people want to see that journey, and people want to attach a personality. And
sure. There's no such thing as the faceless brand anymore.
Yeah, they want to have a connection with the person, and then they want to, and it's very much like the whole YouTube thing, where they want to know the person before they invest in the product too, which I think is great. But in order to be on those shows, I will always say it is a show before a competition. Mm-hmm. Just because you're a good designer, could be a great designer, doesn't mean you're made for TV. I just went on that show knowing that I could do my best, but I could give them what they wanted from me. You know, I had enough personality that they would carry me through. But I was eliminated when I didn't give them what I wanted, probably. And what I didn't give them was more of a struggle, because they did want you to fall before you rose. And that was a better storyline than someone who was just the top the whole time. Because I was really never in the bottom until the last episode.
Right.
I wasn't. I was always either the top or I was safe. But I was mainly at the top, always. Right. Because I believed it, but I also believed in my work. It's not even me being boastful. I believe in my work because I put a lot of thought.
You had such a unique point of view. You have such a unique point of view. Like, you know exactly who you are as a designer. People know exactly what they're going to get whenever they go to Charles Lu. I mean, I feel like, I know that's a big name to throw out there, but I feel very similar to somebody like Christian Soriano. Like, you know exactly who you are as a designer. You know exactly who your client is. And that is such a rare thing, especially for a show like that, because so many people very clearly have talent, but they don't know what to do with it. I see that a lot with other writers. People can write. People have the skill of writing, but they don't know why they're writing. They don't know who their reader is. They have no idea why they're trying to write the story they're trying to write. They're just trying to write something that's trendy. They're just trying to write something. Oh, I just need something to sell. It's like, do you need something to sell or do you have something to say? Because those are two very different things.
Well, that's right. So we're talking about who are you as a designer, or not really, what are you offering to the world? And if what you're offering to the world is just kind of something that's already existing, you're comparing yourself to somebody else. I always sit on my work and I'm like, is this me? Is it honest? Is it the work that I believe in? And if I don't, I don't do it. And it's always like, it's very cut and dry with me, or I further develop the idea. But if it doesn't feel like it's me or it's leading towards something that I've already seen, I don't put it out there because I have the confidence to find something better. I have the confidence to put the idea away. I have so many archival sketches that have never been released of designs I've wanted to do. And then literally like 5, 10, 2 months later, I see them on the runway, right? So I know I'm in the right direction. And it's a shame I can't produce everything that's in my head and I don't have it big enough, but I always believe in what I do. And if I don't believe in what I do, I get to this state where I can believe in what I do. But what's something I'll never offer is something that's already pre-existing, because I just don't find honor in it, which is probably the struggle of a designer as well. The fact that most of the designers who are making a lot of money are copying what's already out there.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Big brands do this too.
Yeah.
So many big brands that are following that wave of just repeating what's safe on the market just to get that money. But for me, it needs to be honest before everything else. And I carry that through my work. And the people that follow me understand that, that level of authenticity I try to offer.
Let's talk about the fashion industry for a moment, because I feel like it is... In no other industry that I can think of, at least, do people both love the product, like universally, there is not a human being that I have ever met on this earth, no matter how not into clothing they are, that doesn't have a thing that they like to wear. Whatever it is, they have a pair of jeans that makes their butt look good. Whatever it is, I don't care if you're... If you think you're the straight guy that doesn't care about anything at all, there is something you wear when you were trying to impress somebody. There is something there.
Of course.
So it's this universal thing that everybody participates in. Everybody wears clothes, everybody. But there's also this kind of dark underbelly of exclusion inside of the fashion industry where not all people are able to see themselves in clothes, in models, in designers, in styles and sizes and fits and stuff. How do you navigate that space? How do you navigate fashion for people, for yourself, for other folks, for other buyers and stuff that have had a hard time in the past kind of seeing themselves reflected in this industry?
The best way I can describe, the best way I can kind of go on about this is, well, to answer the first part, what clothing has, what's so powerful about clothing is it's an extension of your identity, and it can kind of shift on how you perceive the world that day, and then it can give you confidence, right? And I think people gravitate towards certain brands because it takes a lot of thoughtfulness in order to design something that speaks to someone in that way. And people always think it's a loud thing. Sometimes it's a very small, subtle thing that can speak to somebody. And those subtle differences in clothing, that's often more difficult than the larger expressions you're going to make. A lot of brands And I would say this is the big, if we're going to talk about fashion, less accessible fashion, I'm going to kind of bring this more towards luxury fashion, which I used to capitalize on this identity they craft, right? And you buy into that brand and so you're buying into a brand and it has a certain image that they're trying to project and you want to be part of that, right? And sometimes, sadly, what they'll do is they'll exclude other people by using a certain race or a certain body size or promoting this idea of a lot of exclusivity. Now that I've been so in that, mm-hmm. and I've worked so heavily in couture, and I've dealt with really wealthy clients, I really stepped back and I asked myself, I was like, is this what I want to be a part of? Mm-hmm. Like, what narrative do I want to create in my clothing? And if you look at my latest collection, it's very subtle in how I respond back to the fashion industry like that, because I've been designing. My first client was someone who was pregnant, you know, and my sisters were, you know, varying sizes when I was growing up. So these are the first women I designed for. So it was never an issue about for me having someone look a certain way to make my clothing shine. Like, I was designed for somebody else. And that's why I have such a, the way I design, I always have this idea of how do I make something flattering for people, right? I'm not always a selfish designer in the way that, like, how do I design it? How do you fit into my world? How does something fit into our world, right? Together. That's because clothing, it only becomes alive when the wearer partakes in it.
I really like that you said it that way, that you don't have to fit into my world, because I do think that that is the fashion industry that I grew up idolizing. I mean, you know, what little millennial gay didn't grow up idolizing fashion or something? But, you know, the older you get, the more you realize you are trying to fit yourself into a world of maybe it's financially inaccessible to you. Maybe the size is just never right. Listen, I could have $1 million, but I still can't walk into a store and find anything that fits me because I'm 6'6".
I didn't realize that's all.
I am a giant and nothing fits me. But like so many people are, you know, do they just kind of throw their hands up and just say, well, I guess that just isn't for me. I guess I can't have clothing that feels like art. I guess I can't have wearable art. I just have to wear, you know.
I also think that's, I mean, like, what's interesting too is we can't all afford art as
sure.
well. And to take something that has that much time invested in it, sometimes it's just nice to appreciate. And I think if we circle back into the show, like Next in Fashion, that's why so many people love it, right? Mm-hmm. They may not be able to have it in their closets, but they can understand the journey that went into it, which makes them appreciate it that much more. And my response to the whole exclusivity thing, if I'm gonna go back to that point, because it's just so important from where I started with my latest collection, was the reason why I wanted to do like these corsets with these sweatshirts and kind of twist the idea of what casual and couture was because when I lived in Dubai and I was designing for this ultra wealthy people there, I remember I was being turned away from bars and clubs because I was wearing shorts, like nice shorts, right? Like tailored shorts. Mm-hmm. And they like, you know, like that's not formal for this place. And so I was like, what is formal to you? Like, I'm a fashion designer. I literally design with beading, with like a lot of handwork, and you're telling me that I can't be in this space. And so really that was a response to me. This whole collection kind of like streetwear and high fashion collided together. And that's why it looks so, that's why it's such a strong personality, because I kind of tapped into my own experience. And how fashion can always, how people can have a definition of what is upscale and what isn't, and what is old and what is, and what you don't belong, and how we gatekeep certain things. I probably, when I was younger, I used to care a lot about status, and now I'm more about expression. So that's where I sit with everything right now.
Is there a criticism of the fashion industry that you think isn't warranted? That you think, I don't know that people are getting that right.
Like right now, like a trend, or
like I said, a criticism of the industry as a whole. Kind of talking about
what I probably hate the most, and I never use hate, but I really strongly dislike this, and it's all of these brands that are charging so much for things that should not be costing that much, and they're really consumer, right? And this inflated luxury of goods that should not be costing like what they do.
It does feel like there is less of a midpoint in fashion lately. Either it's a Shein, you know, $7 top, or it's a $700. Like there's just, I just remember, like, I used to be able to go to a place like a J. Crew or something, like in the early 2000s, you know.
Well, there was, like, there was a higher level of quality back then. There was. There was an absolute higher level of quality. Like, even if I was looking at my mom pulled out the other day, like, this Gap canvas bag. And I was like, this is made very, very well.
Right.
And you just don't see that now. Now the canvases you see are, like, falling apart. They're so fun. But they're, for me, what was so important was offering your clientele a product that was worthwhile to have, right? And so, and now these products, and then the other end of the spectrum, like the things that are cheap are really bad quality, right? But the things that are very expensive are actually not as great quality as they used to be. They're more mass produced, and they're trying to overcharge, so the brand is equated with a lot of luxury, right? And I guess they have to do that too, because, you know, even for example, Chanel, every woman has a flat bag now, and they're trying to make that more exclusive, right? But the bag isn't worth that much to make. Like, there's,
oh, I'll never forget, way back in a previous life, I worked in luxury retail. I worked at Burberry. I'll name drop. It's been so long. There are things that if you're going to spend the money, if you have Burberry money and you're going to spend the money at Burberry, there are things that you should still buy at Burberry. The Burberry trenches are still, they're still iconic. They're still well-made. They're still great quality. There are certain things to buy there. Burberry cashmere, great. Burberry polos.
But you
those
know,
Burberry polos are made in the same exact factory as Old Navy and Gap polos. It's just, they are $250, whereas you can go to Old Navy and get the same exact polo for $25. It just doesn't have the little
luxury. It's wild, because a brand can only manufacture so many things and have
exactly.
So many.
Exactly. It can only put so many of its resources in certain places.
Yeah. And so where is this cost coming from? That's what I want to know. And if it's like around the same, obviously a Burberry polo cannot cost the same as an Old Navy polo. However, but when you're, it's priced at a point that's laughable. I just think it's really funny, because I remember when I was a kid and I used to like scour the price points of certain luxury goods, because I wanted to be part of that world.
Sure. So, oh yeah.
Where I made a Birkin out of like cardboard paper. I used to care when I was a kid, right?
I'm gonna need you to post that photo to your Instagram, because I need that photo.
Like, I was just doing that because I was so in love with the actual style of the bag. Like, I love the actual style of the bag and the fact that it was hand sewn, right? But that was when like a Birkin was like $2,000, right? Now sure. It's what, 14, 16 for a basic one. And so like,
but isn't that that's artificial, right? It's scarcity. They've created an artificial scarcity with that.
It's not scarce. I mean, like, it's hard to get a certain style, right? But you can still get one, right? But the whole, people wouldn't buy into it if it was just everywhere, right? It is everywhere, but there's still a game to get it, right? Yeah. And I just think it's really, really funny. I don't know if I want to be that kind of designer. I probably do not want to be that kind of designer. Because for me, it's about something else. That's not why I'm in that game, right?
Who's inspiring you? What inspires you? Where do you draw your inspiration from for the next collection? Do you, I know we kind of talked at the beginning, right before the show, about, you know, how you have periods of kind of where you are refilling your own well of creativity. How do you do that? How do you continue to produce new work that challenges yourself, that builds on what you've done, that stays true to your identity? And how do you keep that motivation going?
I'll be very honest with you. I was kind of in a period where I just wanted to stop design for a little bit.
Sure. What creative person hadn't been there? I get that.
Oh, I mean, I could keep on going. Like, if I sat down, I could probably draw 20, 30 things that I'm in love with. But right now, I kind of need to just step back and kind of assess everything, because design is a business, and that business side can be very taxing on you. And it kind of drain your creativity. So right now I'm in the process of falling in love with fashion again. I'm kind of at the tail end of happening, right? But for me, when I'm designing a collection, what I'll do is I generally stay away from social media, right? As connective as it can be a very toxic place. And of course, with the advent of AI, everyone thinks they're a designer now, and that's not the case, right? They're ripping off work that they're ripping off my work. They're ripping off a bunch of things. And so what I tap into is the human experience. And also in the future, what's going to be the most expensive thing is the human experience, the human touch, because everything's going to be so automated. So what I'll do is I'll start, you know, I build off what I previously did, what you said, because I need to know my past before I can kind of move on to my future and kind of figure out what the next step and the next progression of my work is. It's always a continuous journey, I find. It's never just a completely starts from the very beginning. It's always been a progression onto the next thing, even in small and subtle ways. But I'll start studying people. I'll start looking back into my life, introspection. I'll start thinking about like where I've gone, where I want to be. And those are the kind of things that drive me on to the next thing, because the way that I designed this collection was I just thought about, you know, luxury and fashion and what that meant, and that just opened up everything else. And I was like, okay, this and that. And I kind of have I have all these ideas in my head that float around in the background that I never tap into. And then, you know, it's like a bank of all this work in my head and these ideas and lines that I always return to. And so I can kind of pick up what's in here. I don't need a lot of reference photos, because I can figure out as I'm going along. It's an organic process. But yeah, that's how
I've talked a bit about, you know, feelings of exclusion inside of the fashion industry. And I think it's easy to, you know, sit there and analyze that to death. But I want to talk about what excites you about inclusivity in the fashion industry right now, because social media, shows like Next in Fashion, it's showing us a side of fashion that is breaking down all sorts of barriers. Lots of shows now are, you know, there's models of all sizes, all races, all gender expressions, all sorts of folks are starting to see themselves reflected in this industry. Does that excite you? How are you participating in that? What about that is getting you jazzed for what's coming next in fashion? Oh God, I just did that. Oh no, that sounded so commercial. Oh no.
The title in the movie, no? but yeah, I'm glad it's not becoming, I mean, some people are making it a trend, but I'm glad it, even if it's a trend, it's a great trend.
Yeah.
Right. And I think especially what happened while everything was like Crazy Rich Asians and all these Asian shows coming out with all these leads, that kind of opens the door for more multiculturalism as well. We're getting used to that, because all of a sudden, you know, white people aren't in the forefront of fashion, and it used to be just before even was size exclusivity, you had to be a certain weight. And then if you were slightly darker, you had maybe there was like, what, two Asians in a show and two black people like fighting for each other in that space. And obviously I never, I mean, when I was in Dubai, I was always fighting my boss who was, she was racist. She would never let me have a non-white model display. And to be honest, the country itself, there's a lot of racism there. I probably never experienced so much racism in my life as I have when I was living in Dubai. And so when I came here, I was like, you know what? Asian model, I want as much color on the runway. Because that's just like what we see. Like, that's just normal to me. Right? Yeah. I've never viewed fashion as belonging to any particular size or any color. Obviously there's reference points, and obviously certain skin tones look better with certain colors, but that just has to, that boils down to color theory, not necessarily anything to do with race or anything, because that's equated to anything else. But the things that always tied me, the things that I always looked for in a model was, a model was strength, confidence. Those are the things that always popped out to me, and I'm very happy we still have a long way to go, and ideally my brand would be able to offer a lot, like a big size range in the future. It does take a lot of money and a lot of investment, but I'm very happy we're in this space. We're kind of like on the turning point and on the cusp of fashion when that's happening too. That's good. That's a good side of social media. The AI is not.
I can't think of a creative outlet that AI is not just like the worst thing right now.
I was probably the best thing that AI has done is being able to automate work emails.
Sure. There you go.
Because no one.
What is the nicest way to tell you that is not my job?
I will take that, but anything else is just not for me. You know, I think once you start removing the human touch from things, it mm-hmm. becomes robotic, and it just becomes like, we're just going to be sitting here like attached to computers, and that's going to be our life with a feeding.
Very WALL-E, like we're all floating around in the city.
Right. And we won't even have, it was going to be more Matrix than anything. Right. We'll just be like, we'll be having these like, with these avatars that will just be acting out on our behalf, but we just like are strapped to feeding tubes. And I just don't want to live in a world where that's fashion.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't like that doesn't, and it's been on my mind. It's been weighing on my mind recently, right? Is like all you need to do is type in three words and you have a collection. Right. It's wild.
Gosh, I feel like we are less than 10 years away from like print on demand clothing. So you just pair your AI Midjourney, generated art with a print on demand thing. And then it's like, oh, see, I'm a designer. When you didn't create any part of that, none of that was your own creativity. The visual AI stuff is just stealing from other artists and piecing it together. It's like a collage, and it's gross.
The funny thing about people, I will say, is no matter how automated we get, we still love that human touch.
Yeah.
Or organic touch, even, I should say. Not even human, but like that touch that something else, it belonged to the living world, right? And that's
sure.
I mean, like a 3D printed garment that's made of rubber and like silk against your skin. Right? What would you rather wear? Right.
There's just an intentionality behind a human being created this for you to wear to this thing in your life. There's just such a giving of energy that just can't be replicated.
It needs to go back into nature some way, whether it's the human mind, it's the material, it's the intent of it. It has to go back, you know. I don't want to be, yeah.
How did you know? When did you take the step to say, oh, this is now my full-time job? There's a lot of creative people out there who don't. It's a scary thing to go like, I gotta believe in myself before other people are going to believe in me. How did you know to take that leap?
I think I had a choice. I was, when I was a kid, I was like, I'm going to be an artist. And then like grade five, I'm like, I'm going to be a fashion designer. Like there was in between, like, that's all I saw for myself. Like it's been, my mental dedication has been towards that and only that. And so when I was in high school, my goal in high school was to get the best grades that I could get in order to excel in every field, because I wanted to prove to my parents that I could make it in any field before I decided to be fully dedicated in fashion, right? And I learned a lot of amazing skill sets along the way, which is why a lot of my design has a lot of discipline in it and a huge technical aspect. So I'm able to figure out how things are made from a very technical viewpoint, which I would say schooling was great for me in that instance. But did it help me in fashion? Probably not. It probably only helped me because I knew where to go and how to break things apart. But there was never a discussion where I was just like, you know what? Should I be a lawyer or should I be a fashion designer? It was always going to be like a fashion designer. There was no other option for me. I couldn't picture myself doing anything else. You know, I didn't have that luxury to have a choice. It was decided for me.
That's amazing. What was the first moment when you said, okay, I've made it?
Have I had that moment?
Have you not? You've dressed celebrities. You've gone all over the world. You've been a creative director. You've been on TV. Have you not had a moment where you thought, okay, I've arrived?
I mean, showing up on the set of Next in Fashion, being around all these people, I did have a slight moment, but I think what was even stronger is when I debuted my collection, because it didn't belong to anything else. It didn't belong to Next in Fashion. It didn't belong to sharing with a partner. It didn't belong to anyone but me, and I did it by myself, right? So I think that was a bigger moment for me. Probably, and I will say probably because I'm so hard on myself, is my bigger moment will be like when I made a big sale, or when I have the big store, or when that bank account is just flooded with orders right now. It could be, right? But we are in the process of looking for a lot of investment to be able to do that. And it's been a very, very long taxing journey for that to happen. But I think once I can kind of stand on my own two feet as a designer and have it be more self-sufficient without me always having it present, that's probably when. Because it still feels like me playing a fashion designer as opposed to, it's weird, right? It's the imposter syndrome. And it happened.
My last book was published with Simon & Schuster, Big Five publisher, came out during the pandemic. So it's like my book launched. And I just kind of found myself in my house, like thinking, but like something was going to change.
Can I please tell you that I can relate to that experience, because I lost my job in Dubai. I came, they kept $100,000 from me. Right. And I had to like, I was in the process of like, I was with no money to start anything. And then I'm like, you know what? When the show airs, something's going to happen. When did the show air? The show aired 2 months before COVID lockdown. And I was like,
it's so, just, boom.
Yeah.
And I was just standing there going like, I had seen the trajectory of what public, like, you know, publishing with a Big Five and like all your dreams are coming true. And oh my gosh, I've got a book out in the world and I'm going to be a real author now. And it's like, you have all these visions of what that looks like and what that's going to feel like. And it's none of those things. It's none of those things. I mean, it is very cool having people all over the world. No, you know, oh, I love your book. I loved your stuff. What's your next thing? You know, it's really cool to, you know, it's real bougie to be like, oh, I had a meeting with my agent. Like, you know, there's that piece of it. But none of it, I don't know. I think I'm still waiting to feel like I've made it. You know, I think I've.
That discussion with you and what that discussion is, and it slipped out just earlier as you said that, when do you feel like you've made it? And that's the whole thing of being happy in the present moment, because you have to enjoy that journey. And that journey is also embracing the struggle, right? because if you're always chasing that big moment, you're so blindsided to the process you've had to go through to get to that point. And what's longer in life, those that journey or that one moment to feel something, right?
Lady Gaga talked about this. She said, you know, every time I write an album and it wins all the awards it's going to win, okay, when award season's done, I go around the house and I take down all the little awards and I say, okay, let's do it again. Because the creative journey, like you're talking about, the being a creative person isn't the things that you have done. It's the process in and of itself. It's continuing to do that. Why do I write? Because I have to write.
Why do you design?
Because you have to design. Like, it's just who you are. And the process of, you know, I have to write a whole lot of crap to get the good stuff, you know? Yeah, there's probably a whole bunch of sketches, like you talked about earlier, there's a whole bunch of sketches that you just can't make them.
I don't, you know, even know.
Big folder of ideas that I cannot write all of these books. I can do one thing at a time. And if that idea passes me by, oh, well, it was somebody else's idea.
And I guess. I don't know why I have such a huge problem with like social media, right? And it's the way that like people are just, they just expose everything at once. And for me, it was such a private process. For me to share people into that inner space is very, it's been very difficult, because what I like to show is the end of what I'm comfortable with. So I'm trying to get more open about sharing the process of everything that goes behind it. But there's only so much you can fit in a 3-column situation.
What's your favorite fashion movie? Or fashion moment in a movie?
My favorite fashion moment. I think my favorite fashion film. It's two. It's tied. The best clothes, I would say, are in Clueless. I know. People would say Devil Wears Prada. But Devil Wears Prada is my second one, probably. Because I could quote that film. That's what made me.
Oh, sure. I've
watched that film maybe 50-something times.
Sure.
And on DVD, and when you have the DVD, you're like, I'm gonna watch the same film again. And I remember my sister like was nudging me. She's like, that's gonna be us one day, right? And so you manifest these things. A fashion moment for me, what's the biggest fashion moment? I don't know if I have one. It's just, for me, it's always about how a character embodies that clothing and it fits into their world and it tells that story. I always really, really appreciate that. But probably I really, something about Clueless really stuck with me when I was a kid.
Love that.
Look how I dress.
And of course you ended up, you know, being known so famously as a streetwear designer.
Right.
And elevated streetwear.
Break it up, right? If you break it up, like high socks, white shoes, like who's wearing, I'm wearing that idea. a schoolboy look, and I went to like a private, like I went not private, but I went to a Catholic school with a uniform. It was like, that's how I dressed, right? And so that really stuck to me, that idea. But yeah, I think that more than Devil Wears Prada, for sure, because there was an exclusivity in Devil Wears Prada, which was great.
Oh yeah,
but there was a real personality in Clueless, which I really enjoyed. And it was fun. You know, I like to keep it light sometimes because even though my clothes look so serious, so sometimes, like, it's just me laughing in the background most of the time. Like, I don't know how I came up with that. I was going through something.
I love that. You know, there was one that came out in the last year that we really loved that I think we've watched several times. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. I don't know if you've seen that yet.
Yeah.
It is precious. It is going to, it's a period piece. It's about the early days of Christian Dior. It is going to make you want to fall into this movie and just put your face on all the fabric. It's just, it's a beautiful movie and it's heartwarming. Like, you know, good things happen to good people.
Attack the mannequin right now. It's just start designing again and draping fabric. You know, it's a process that I miss. I don't know if I'm like mentally ready to do that just yet. Probably the next 2 weeks I will. I also have a client that I have to work on soon. I'm just thinking that I've been pushing back. It's due in like May, but I'll crank it out. I work well under pressure, obviously. You've seen.
Is there a, I know that you don't, you said you don't do a lot of celebrity pulls, but is there a particular celebrity? Is there a red car? Is there a particular red carpet? Is there an event you want to design for and a person you want to design for that event?
I mean, I did, but like, I'm between you and me, like, I don't fawn over celebrity, right? Like, I just don't, like, it's just not been my thing. If I fawn over people who are like, I respect creatively, but I've never been that person to fangirl. Like, I just, cause I, like, I view myself as like a high creative who like wants to like create things, but I don't believe in like the artifice that comes with everything else. But like, I remember after, I think after the first two reels I posted of the first collection, which was months ago, and I still have to finish posting that. Because I every time I post a look at three,
I'll come to your social media. I post way too much, so I will post less about me, and I'll come post for you.
But in 1 week, I got Sierra, Gwen Stefani, and Madonna in 1 week. But that I couldn't. I was only able to deliver two of those, and then they didn't end up using them because one didn't arrive in time, and it got lost. And then the other one arrived, but I don't know if they released the footage. And then Madonna pulled out because she loved it, but she wanted it within like one day. And I was like, there's no way I can get it to you in time. So they
let me hop on my little bicycle and just get it. Sure, Madonna.
But like the problem is too, the way these celebrities wear clothing is like they'll track it through mud and they'll
It is such a privilege for you to be worn by me. I mean, you know, there's...
I'm like, I worked 4 months on this garment, and for you to drag it through the mud, I don't care who you are. Like, I don't care who you are. Like, you need to respect the fact that I put a lot of work into it. Because for me, clothing isn't disposable. Like, it's not a... I don't view clothing in that way that you should just, you know, treat it like garbage because you want to. It should be part of your life, but I still have a lot of respect for how things are made, and I take great care of things. And so that has also prevented me from giving out loans. It's different if you pay for it, and I made it for you.
you paid for it. You do whatever you want with it. That's fine.
Well, yeah, that's part of your life, right? Up until but until that price, until that check comes over, it's part of my life.
I think it would be so interesting for your clothes to be on the Dune runway, the next Dune movie. I think.
You know what? Yeah. I will say references are a lot better than mine. I mean, like, I'm not giving you any references just because I've been so not involved in anything that's happening right now. But it's so easy to say Met, but I would love to do costuming. I would love it. Like, I'd love to do I'd love to do an opera. I'd love to do an ice skating costume. I have a few collabs in the works right now that might be released in the future, but I'd love to do something that kind of incorporates two worlds together.
I will write a book. It will get adapted into a movie. You can do the costumes. How about that? We'll do this lovely little synergy.
That was just like the clothes were so out of context, but they're just like randomly wearing couture.
It is interesting that you said, so a novel that I'm working on, actually one of the main characters on my little vision board of this character, there was a cropped hoodie thing that you did, and I have her wearing that. And that's before I even had her name, but main character in my book, I called her Hoodie Girl. Nobody knows that. I haven't told anybody that. In my notes, like as I was kind of like figuring out who this main character was and like what her motivation was and where she was going to go and how I was going to take her there, I didn't have her name yet, and I just kept calling her Hoodie Girl, and it was your hoodie that was I would have to go back. I'm sure it was something I saw from your show, but it was this cropped hoodie, like dancer hoodie thing, and I was like, oh well, she's a dancer, so yes, yeah,
of course
she wears this hoodie. Yeah,
that's great.
It's great. It's this big science fiction thing. It's this huge novel, and I have to, I'm supposed to be editing it, and it intimidates the living shit out of me because it's so big. It's this big. It's 180,000 words, and I am intimidated myself out of it.
You find large projects so daunting?
The writing of it wasn't daunting, but having to sit
and cut out all the parts that aren't working and refine the part. That's just so big to me. I'm like, I need a month off work so that I can do this, because I can't do it full time yet. Yeah. That's the fun secret about writers, is that our payments for our books and stuff are broken up into like thirds and fourths and fifths. So like, yeah. I won't even fully get paid for my book for years, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah. Yay.
It's the gift that will slowly give.
So much fun. Well, thank you so much for being here. Well, I really appreciate your time. This has been fun. If folks would like to follow you and your fashion journey, how can they do that?
They can find me at my business page, which is Charles_Liu. And that is on Instagram, or Charles_Liu, which is my personal. Right now, they're kind of the same thing until I figure out what to do with them. You can, and if you go to my socials on my link tree, it's all there. You can find everything else, from documentaries to my website and all that good stuff. But that's where you can find me.
Okay, so it is a cozy day. What are you wearing? What is your go-to cozy thing?
My go-to cozy day, if it's not too hot, would probably be...
You're in Canada. It's never too hot.
It's never too cold. Sorry. There we go. It's never too cold. I'm going to be wearing like a long zip-up hoodie, like draped across the shoulder. Thinking it's funny. Like, no matter how muscular I get, when I wear a hoodie off the shoulder, I just become like Ariana Grande. And I'm like,
Finally, I was gifted this giant oversized hoodie. Like, because yeah. I've never had a hoodie that fits ever. I've never in my whole life had one that fit. And they have these like giant blanket hoodies now. And I was gifted one for Christmas. And it comes down to like past my hands. And I'm like, I'm a little
so weird though when you're. When you're large and then you find something that you feel engulfed by.
Oh my God, I just want to feel tiny.
I'm like, I'm so delicate. I could float away and travel by if I wanted to.
Oh gosh. Okay, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to stop recording now. That is going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Charles Liu. Look for him on a runway near you. If you like this show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. Consider sharing it with your friends on social media. You could also like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And while you're there, leave a review. Reviews help recommend the show to other listeners like you. If you hate the ads at the beginning and end of each episode, consider joining my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server, and you get to help me pick the questions for future guests. Sign up at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Or if you'd like to connect with me on social media, I am at headonfirepod everywhere. I'm going to go, but remember, the most fashionable accessory is always confidence. And maybe a very well-structured oversized hoodie. Be well.